Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
You're listening to RTE Radio 1. Drama on One is offered as a podcast at rte.ie/drama on one and on the RTE Radio app. Tonight's play, Clarity at Last by Charlie McGuinness, was joint winner of the 2024 PJ O'Connor Awards. A man, his daughter, and a club detail the events of an evening in their lives, and each, in their own individual way, find some clarity. With language that some may find offensive, Seamus O'Rourke, Eamon Owens, and Aveen McCann star in Clarity at Last by Charlie McGuinness.
The evening started with prunes. Prunes. A white bowl filled with custard lightly decorated with three prunes. The holy trinity of prunes staring up at me out of the bowl. Prunes. Yes, you enter a stage of life where prunes are a necessary dietary requirement. Prunes in the morning, noon and night, and you will happily... You know you're finished when you need a go of prunes to have a go. I know God will take me one day, but when I die, I can guarantee you it won't read, died at home surrounded by love and family, peacefully of constipation. Must be an awful way to go. But thanks to the biblical-like fruit that is the prune, that is one thing I am not afeard. Oh, it crept up on me slowly. First it was a discreet little carton of prune juice in the fridge. Then all of a sudden it's fresh prunes, raw prunes, tinned prunes, prunes with stones, prunes with no stones, and prune extract. Yeah, prune extract. Mrs. Home helped us put it in me porridge, and this evening she had left three delicate prunes in with the custard. Anyways, me programmes are on, and I was just in the middle of eating the stone out of the first prune when the daughter lands in the door with the club and the child. Now, let me tell you, the child is the closest thing I have ever met to the perfect human being. 2 years old, 2 foot high, and not two shades does she give. An absolute blessing. And she's like a whirlwind, will-o'-the-wisp, straight away, in and out of presses and rooms and fridges, and the club following like a gom. The club is the son-in-law, always standing there with the rabbit in the headlights look on him. Anyways, the daughter comes in, gives me a high five, and comments that she is happy to see me eating the prunes, and questions if I would like a cup of tea. No, prunes is enough, says I. And she suggests putting on the lamp light in the corner as it was getting dark, and I said, go on ahead. They do come and stay with me a lot now since I got the diagnosis. The club is all delighted with himself, blowing about his best man speech at the wedding that they had been at, and how he found it fierce emotional. Me and the daughter got a giggle out of that. He's me best friend ever, he says. But it struck something in me. I suddenly had a moment of crystal clearness. Clarity, you might say. It felt like I was holding me best friend's neck again. I was brought back 60 years to the party. At the age of 22, something in me died, never to come back. He lived in this caravan in the mountains at Llangefnlan, and his place was used for parties, even if he was there or not. It was a freezing cold night, and you couldn't make out what part of the caravan was what with the frost. And there was book eating going on, and pushing and pulling and jostling, and I threw him across in front of me, and his head landed in the window of the caravan. And we all went silent. And suddenly he started laughing, and we all laughed. But then he pulled his head back out, and he cut his throat in a shard of glass. And it caught his jugular. An eighth of an inch left or right, and he would have been grand. I gathered my best friend's head in me hand as he bled out in the back seat on the way to the hospital, and I knew he was gone. She knew. I mean, it could have easily been my head than his. And for years I blamed myself. But now, for some reason, for the first time in me life, I accepted it. I didn't blame myself. I accepted chance. I accepted what had happened. I didn't feel any the better for what had happened, but I accepted it.
I was absolutely dying. Head over heels, sick as a dead cat, with a head like Oliver Plunkett of a Good Friday. Not well. Fucking dying. Jesus, if hangovers could talk, this one would burn the ears off you. In bits. Well shook. Not a well man. And of course, the missus wasn't best pleased. It's me best friend's wedding. So what did she expect? And he is. He is me best friend ever. But Jesus, I was fucking dying. Oh, fuck me pink lad. Outrageous hangover. Outrageous. I tell you, atrocious. Atrocious is what it was. From stocious to atrocious, huh? The wedding was a fierce bit of crack. I was best man. Me speech was absolutely top-notch, mate. The music didn't work for the photo presentation thing I had put together, but apart from that, not too bad. You see, I had a load of photos ready to go of the happy couple over the years. And the music didn't work, but the crowd started cheering and I was egging them on, so it worked out best. I mean, it was borderline stand-up, if I do say so myself. And that's what she told me. The missus, "You're a natural comedian," she says. And I knew I'd nailed it. Had them in the palm of me hand. But you have to go home. And before hitting the road back to Papa's house, the missus's owl lad, we had the afters. So I took full advantage of this being my best friend's wedding, 'cause in my head, I had carte blanche to have a few scoops, you know, after the stress of me best man's speech. Had a lovely few pints. She wasn't too happy about it, needless to say. "Why don't you have a Heineken Zero?" she says. "A zero? So what's the point?" And just as we were leaving, I was slowly drifting back into drunkenness, and me best mate, the groom, came over, grabbed me around the neck in a headlock and just says to her, "What a guy. What a guy. One of the best. One of the best. What a guy, huh?" And her fucking raging. Oh, no. Then the quiet drive home. The "it's a bit too quiet in the car" vibe going on. Even the child. She was in a chocolate coma in the back, staring wide-eyed out the window at all the blurry cows in the field. Ah, yeah. Full of chocolate from all the bridesmaids. I knew she'd be hyper. I said it. "Stop giving that child chocolate. She's had enough." But sure, I turn around and there she was again with another piece. And I knew there'd be a good chance I'd be putting her down. I was hoping when we get back to Papa's house the child might crash and burn. But when we got to the house, nightmare. Clarification from the missus, it was me putting her down and that I'm in charge of the child and she is doing nothing and I'm like, fuck this. And we go in the door and of course, the child goes mental. Papa's house is like the child's electric picnic. In and out of every press, grabbing ice cream from the freezer and she's running rings around me. Absolute disaster. And then the drink started to die in me. Disaster. And I'm sweating. And she's talking away with her dad and I try and bring the child in along with me to the dad because I wanted to tell him about the wedding and the speech and I was talking I don't know how long, but he drifts off to another world and I don't know whether to shake him or say anything, but before I could, the missus calls me and tells me that the child has laid a log and needs changing. So that was the end of that.
I was absolutely raging. There he was, horsing into pints again. I told him, gave him a gentle reminder to take it easy because we are going staying with Dad that night. But did he listen? No, not a hope. He was worse than the night of the wedding. Him revelling in the glory of his speech the day before. The egot. It was a disaster. The music didn't play for the presentation of pictures he had made and he didn't hold the mic properly. The only saving grace was his friends heckling him, which got lots of laugh. Pharrell Williams' Happy was meant to be playing. The best one he could come up with was, I think Pharrell has left the building. Oh, I told him when he asked, how did it go? I says, you're the finest egot I know. But you know, he kind of got away with it. The big silly head in him. He's like yon silly egot in the mini Mr. Bean. He just has that silly look about him. But don't worry, I love him. Well, you know, most of the time. I told the girls he was putting the child down and to fill her with chocolate because part of me was hoping she'd be a nightmare for him. He thinks she loves him putting her down and I think he thinks it's because he is her favourite. But all it is that she has him wrapped round her little finger and knows she can run rings round him.
One more story, Daddy. I go on ground with you, Daddy.
Ah, but you're let him at it. I know I'm her favourite. Anyways, just as we are leaving the afters, the groom comes up, grabs him in a headlock, eyes me and says, he's one of the best, huh? One of the best. And I'm about to throttle him. What a guy. And me about to take the head off him. Him getting stuck into the pints again after a 2-day rip, you'd think he had had enough. But I knew she was going to be wired. So good enough for him. In the door and she goes, mental. Lovely. I go into Dad and he's just sitting in the dark. No light on and it nearly pitch black. And you know, it's just something like that he just doesn't get anymore. He would sit through the night in the dark, whatever part of his brain is gone. And I felt sorry for him for about a millisecond because that is one thing he doesn't want is for people to feel sorry for him. And I put the lamp on in the corner and I ask if it's okay to put on the cartoons for the child. Dad loves the telly. I got him a telly a couple of Christmases ago, you know, because he loves his programmes. And when we brought it in, he just started crying. And it's not like Dad, you know, to cry. Emotion. They say it can be a side effect of the Parkinson's. But he just cried and I caught his eye through the side of his glasses and it was like he was a mixture of proud and sad and embarrassed and he looked at me like a child in school, not sure how to process the way he was feeling. And it's so hard to see this person, this man, my dad, who had been such a strong, dominant presence my whole life, to have a moment where he might have felt like that with his own daughter, you know. It was just difficult to, I don't know, comprehend or make sense of. I don't know. But then in a weird way, it's nice. It's not nice to see him crying, but to see him show emotion, you know. Something he would never have done before. Anyways, he started telling me about his custard and Mammy and how the missus home help doesn't make the custard the way Mammy used to. It's a funny thing, but since he got the diagnosis, he talks about Mammy more. Stories and stories, and a lot of the time, the same ones over and over again. But sure, I let him at it. And of course, it's one about Mammy and the Calvin Mary. He always tells this one. It's about Mammy and the day after she won the Calvin Mary. Yes, Mammy won the Calvin Mary 1971. Whoop, whoop. A framed picture of it up in the fireplace. A great day for the parish. But he tells it with such pride. And it's not the fact she won the Calvin Mary. It was the next day. And a few of the cattle on the town road had got out and they got the call to put them in. So off they go, Mammy barefoot, This is the major detail in the story. Barefoot. Because Mam always loved walking around barefoot. And they leave the house to herd these cattle, but he says he'll never forget following her up the road. Her walking barefoot. Not a care in the world ahead of him. And he shouts after her, "There she is, the Cavan Mary herding cattle in her bare feet." And he says she turned around with the biggest smile on her face, winked at him, done a little skip, and kept walking.
Anyways, where was I? Oh, yes, the prunes. I was now just finished me second prune, and the club was trying to put the child down, and the daughter asked me, do I mind turning me programmes off till the child gets to sleep? And I says, not at all. And sure, we'll have far better entertainment watching the club trying to get the child to sleep on the monitor job they have. And in fairness to the club, he doesn't disappoint. Such an effort at getting a child to sleep. He's in and out of the room, trying to be patient and then getting thick and then apologising for getting thick. Oh, sorry, baby girl. And now making a real hames of it altogether. And the daughter can see he is struggling but is adamant that she is not going up because she had the child the whole day before at the wedding. But he kept at it. Persistent, some might say, I say stupid. And he's in and out on repeat until this time he leaves and she goes quiet. And he must think she's gone, but I can see her in the monitor. And she is slowly, quietly and very deliberately getting out of the cot. Not a sound out of her. And she takes a step, listens, takes another step, listens, and then she lets an almighty full roar out of her. And straight away the club bursts in the door to see if she is all right, and he nearly takes the child out of it, notices her, goes to jump across her so as not to hit her, and lands head over arse in the cot. I'm not joking yet, the club. And the daughter just rolls her eyes and says, for Jesus' sake, gets up and goes to rescue the situation. But as she leaves, she says, he wouldn't have been much use herding cattle. And I was immediately brought into a second moment of clarity. The cattle and the TB. I was brought back 20 years and I could see the cattle being taken away from me in the backyard. And I reimagined this moment happening again before my eyes. The men in the high-vis jackets loading my livestock, my life and my future into the back of a lorry. To bring it all away and kill it. But I knew part of me was being killed. Part of me died with those cattle. That part of me was gone and I knew was never going to come back. But I could still feel the anger and I started to shout, "Hey! Hey!" And I kept shouting and there was nobody there to tell me to stop shouting, "Hey! Hey! Hey! Hey!" And I don't know how long I was shouting for or what I was shouting for. I was just shouting for something. To feel. And the club comes limping in and settles me and gets me a cup of tea. "Sorry about that," says I. "I do forget myself sometimes." "No worries," says the club. He's not the worst in fairness to him. Did you hear that? The handshaking. Parkinson's can be brought on by a traumatic event. I think that was my one. But when I lost the cattle, I thought I was cursed. Maybe I am. But then maybe we're all cursed, and it's what we make of the curse we have been given. What we do with our own individual curses is what makes us who we are, who I am. It was just a thought. But now, for some reason, I was at one with that being part of my life.
Did you ever hear of Lucy Wolfe. Lucy fucking Wolfe. The Sleep Book? It's this book about sleep and kids and times and approaches and what to do in any situation, deep breaths and all of the rest. The missus does leave it lying about the house. Have you read it yet? Did you read it? I tell you, Lucy Wolfe has a lot to answer for. And no, I haven't read it. I don't need to. I have me own approach. Now, I'm never the best at putting her down, but this night I made a particular hames of it. Oh no, she was running rings around me. And Papa is taking the piss out of me. Will you leave the child alone? He says. Who's fighting with the child? Oh, and herself egging him on, of course. The club. He does call me that. Don't pretend you don't know. I heard him. Caught him one day. I told him a story about this time I locked myself in a public toilet in Japan. And without thinking, he says, "You fucking club." And I don't know if it was his Parkinson's or he doesn't give a shit as he gets older, but he said it and he turned his head away. But even as offended as I was, I felt not sorry for him, but sad for herself. The missus. 'Cause some moments you can see in her world she is slowly losing this man. And he is a lovely man. A fierce air of decency about him, you know. And I hope he likes me, because I do wonder sometimes. But I hope he does, because I like him. Anyways, the child. I don't mind her being cheeky, a bit of crack, you know. But this night now, and I know she's only two, but honestly, I think she was taking the piss out of me. She gave me a look, not so much evil, but, "Daddy, I think you're a bit of an egot." And not only did she make this observation, but she took full advantage of it. So, upstairs we go, and I put her in the cot, and I let her know who's boss. And outside I go, and a millisecond later, she was up and getting out. So, I marched back in then, and gave her the, "This is it, firm, you're going to sleep," talk. And I put her in the cot, and I left. And this usually works a treat. Well, sometimes. Well, it worked once. And I'm not at the door, but she's out and shouting and running about. An absolute disaster. And it's like she wants you to get thick before she can rest and relax and go to sleep. So I get thick, lift her up, and I put her in a cot and I tell her no more stories. You know, laying down the law. And she whimpers as usual a little bit and then starts babbling to herself, probably giving out about me being a big meany beanie. And I slowly walk backwards and leave the room like a bomb disposal expert, trying not to stand on any landmines on the way out. And I'm outside the door. I close the door carefully, remember to breathe, and then the beautiful silence of sleep. When you can hear the bear playing the music, you know you're in the clear. And I was just doing the insurance 5 minutes, sit outside the door scrolling through me phone, dreaming of getting stuck into a glass of red, when I heard this unmerciful roar. An instinct kicked in. And I just turned and ran into the room. And I jumped mid-stride as I entered the room so as to avoid the child, who, much to my surprise, is nearly at the door. And I was mid-air, and it was like I was in slow motion as I glided through the air. I turned to look at the child to see if she was all right. And she looked at me as if to say, "You're fucked now." And I landed in the cot. And then I went to get out and give out fuck to the child, and I realised I'd pulled me hamstring. There I was, laying hopelessly in the cot, roaring for the missus, who needless to say isn't too happy about the situation as she comes running in and says, "Get out of there, you feckin' egot, ya!" And the child starts roaring again and shouting for me to put her down. And then her dad starts roaring downstairs and she tells me to go down to him. And I limp down the stairs and into the kitchen, and he is standing at the back door. Just standing there, shouting. But the shouting was kind of slowing down when I arrived, as if he wasn't sure why or what he was shouting for. But I just guided him back to his seat, and he was kind of trembling and emotional, and he looked at me like a child who was embarrassed. the innocent look beaming through his sad face. And it's not the type of him. I mean, the Bull was his nickname. But he was so childlike in this moment. But I didn't feel sorry for him, because he'd fuck you out of it if he thought you were feeling sorry for him. He'd go through you for a shortcut. So I asked him if he wanted a cup of tea. And he does. So I go to the kitchen.
We were watching him on the monitor, me and Dad. The efforts of him trying to get her to sleep. I gave him the Lucy Wolfe book to read, but of course he didn't. He doesn't have a clue. She is in and out of the cot, making an absolute egot of him. And Dad was getting a great laugh out of it. That was the only thing keeping me from being pissed off. It's one of the things that amazes me, how different Dad is when she's about. He lightens physically, like he loses all tenseness when she is around, and his eyes light up, and all he does is laugh at her most of the time. He gets some kick out of her. She had to do her big dance there one evening before bed. And it's ballerina the film at the minute. And of course the jammies had to come off, and on goes the ballerina outfit, and music goes on, and she takes into it real serious. Big serious face as she dances to the music. But Dad couldn't help himself. He did his best not to laugh, but then he just burst out crying laugh. Now the child wasn't too impressed. "Stop, Papa, stop, Papa." But I was just so happy to see no pain in his face. He looked the old him just for a moment. Anyways, we are watching him try and put her down, and he somehow lands head over arse on the cot, and Dad is in knickers. He's some club, isn't he? So of course, I go up the stairs to rescue the situation. I think I pull me hamstring, he says. Him laying there holding his leg like an upside down beetle in the cot. The absolute egot. Looking up at me while the child is flat out on the ground laughing. "Daddy funny, daddy funny." And I was honestly about to leave him there. But then there was shouting from downstairs. It was Dad. And I knew. You see, he gets distressed sometimes. The doctor says he can have hallucinations. Like he thinks he sees something outside the window or down the bottom of the bed. So I pull himself out of the cot, weigh up me options, and reckon I'm needed more with the child at the minute, so I tell him to check on Dad and I'll put her down. So I lay on the ground with her and we sing along with the bear. "Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream." But I'm singing it to her, but keeping one ear out for downstairs. But everything sounds quiet and all right. And she gives me this innocent look just as she drifts off to sleep. This, "I know I'm a monkey, but love me anyway, just for the crack" look. Oh, she'd buy and sell you and steal the change. But she drifts off and I place her back into the cot with the same care and precision as if placing a grenade on the ground and trying not to set it off. And when I get down, himself is of course having a glass of wine. Decompressing. Aye, that's what he calls it. Decompressing. The only answer is a glass of red. Only job, he reckons. To help him decompress after the child goes to sleep. The egot. He done a course recently on mindfulness and decompression. "Fierce important letting the pressure out of your head," he says. And he has found the best way of doing this is a glass of red. Myself and Dad got a good laugh out of that.
Anyways, where was I? Ah, yes, the prunes. I was on my third prune at this stage, and with the fact that these prunes and this evening was now reaching biblical-like proportions in my mind, I approached this last prune with a little bit of apprehension. But I ease away and wash it down with a couple of mouthfuls of custard, and the daughter has the child settled at this stage in the cot, with a little bear that has piano in its belly playing row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. And the club is on about having a glass of wine and starts yabbering on about nothing like a glass of red after you get the child down, fierce relaxing. Helps him decompress, apparently. Decompress, if you don't mind. If he decompressed any more, he'd be a bedsheet. Ah, now, such a dose. But let him at it, no harm done, or meant, as they say. But as the club natters on, I'm a kind of lost in this side view of the daughter. She has a fierce stillness about her. A composure. She'd motivate a nation, I tell you. And I suppose I'm just admiring her. But the stillness she has is the very same as her mother. Her mother had that great stillness about her. And her stillness suddenly took me to a third moment of clarity. An image of me wife walking into town barefoot. It was as if I was on the road into town and there she was walking ahead of me. Barefoot, as always, and I behind her. She wasn't aware of me, but I could see her, and I wasn't alive. I was like a presence in the air, just following her. A floating presence that could just see and be happy without having to worry about anything real. And whatever part of me was floating was just full of love. I was living in the illusion. And I was so happy living in the illusion of her presence, her bob-black hair, her neck, her shoulder, and the day dress to her knee, and her long calves, and then the bare feet, and me floating after her into town.
You would think he isn't fit for much anymore, but he'd surprise you. One evening I called out and the child was asleep in the car, and I went out to check on her at one stage, and I came in and he had heated up the dinner Mrs. Home Help had left him and put a plate out for the child. And I know this wasn't the biggest deal in the world, but there was something in the way he had done it, the way he presented it, making no deal out of it whatsoever, that, I don't know. But it felt like a bit of me heart had broke. And he said, very simply, "That's for the child." She was still asleep. And I knew she wouldn't eat it, but I made sure to wrap it up and bring it home because he had made this effort, this thought, this gesture of care. Anyways, I got to the kitchen, made him tea and poured a glass of red for myself. Helps me decompress. I need that hour after I put the child down. You know, just to gather your thoughts. It's something to do with breathing or mindfulness or yoga or something. But fuck that. My favourite way to decompress is a packet of Doritos Chili Heat Wave and a glass of red. Boom. In the bag. I'm a new man. And everything was nice and chilled. He had his tea and I had me red. And he settled again and back to himself because, of course, he gets to dig in. "You made a good job of putting the child down," he says. You know, some evenings feel like they're going to last forever. But not in a bad way. They just have a stillness about them. And herself comes down. The child is asleep and all is grand. So I went to check on my Bitcoin. Laugh now, I'm telling you, Bitcoin, it's the future. But then all of a sudden the missus leaves the room for the kitchen. And her dad is in a bit of a daze. And I follow her because I can sense she's upset. And she is standing in the kitchen. And I knew why she was crying. And I gave her a hug. I could feel her relax in my arms. And it's a funny thing, but you do get that feeling of realising how much you love someone when they're at their most vulnerable. You know, that sinking feeling of love in your gut. So, we gather ourselves and go back in, and she puts on his programmes. And after a while, I notice her dad, and he is just staring at her, and it's like he's lost in this stare. But his face is serene, a calm about it, compared to earlier, like after the shouting. He is lost looking at her, and his hand is a bit shaky, and she just slowly put her hand, not on his hand, but on his forearm. And he eventually settles. And I don't think he even copped her hand was there. And the sound of the child's bear rowing the boat up the stream. And we were all in this moment. The three of us were brought together here. Like we were all meant to be here. And it's a silly sort of notion, but I couldn't stop thinking this idea in me head. And I couldn't bring me hand up to me lips with the glass of wine, because I felt that if I made any physical movement, it would just result in tears. So I sat there kind of dumbstruck, just staring at me wife, looking at the TV, with her hand on her father's forearm, as he drifted off to sleep. And we just sat there, the three of us. And everything seemed so, I don't know, still.
He's poured a glass for me. Fair play to him. You know, he has some redeeming features. And he has settled Dad with a cup of tea. So we watch the programmes. But I notice her cartoons are still on, and it's an episode of Peppa Pig Dad is watching, and he doesn't realise it. And himself hasn't copped because he's too busy checking his Bitcoin. And Dad is just locked in this stare at the TV. In this unnatural stare, and he's in his own world. And I worry that he is locked in a worry or concern, and it upsets me. And I don't want it to continue, so I says, "Are you finished your prunes?" And I bring the bowl out to the kitchen. And I'm upset, and himself cops, and he follows me, and in fairness to him, he doesn't say anything. He just knows something is up. And gives me a hug. Nah, he doesn't get much right, but he knows when to give me a hug. Do you get? And so I recover. And we go back in, because Dad would never want to think he upsets us, and I change the channel. But I'm not sitting 10 seconds. But he gets locked in this stare again, and this time it feels different. And it's me he is staring at. And I get a comfort from it. And usually, you know, if someone is staring at you, it's a bit unsettling or weird, you know. Stop staring at me, you freak. But without looking, I could sense his stare, and it was a warm stare. I didn't want to move my head to look at him because I didn't want to upset whatever world or thought he was in. I wanted him to stare forever. So I held my head in that same position, pretending to look at the TV. And I noticed a little tremble in his hand. So I, very quietly and without moving my head, rest my hand on his forearm. And he settles. And I held my hand on his forearm, and I could feel him looking at me. And it was nice. And I remained very still and was pretending to watch the programmes, but something in his arm or in the hairs on his arm, I could feel him drifting and not to sleep. But it was like the feeling I get when I'm putting the child to sleep. I know when she is drifting off. And part of me knew maybe where Dad was drifting too, but it was such a peaceful or beautiful or serene moment that I didn't want to ruin it or something. And it was like the hairs on his arm were telling me to just stay there. Still. And moments passed. And I knew. I felt it. I knew he had drifted off. I knew he was gone. And I didn't turn my head because I knew if I turned my head, it would be clarification. I knew if I turned my head, he would be... So I didn't. I just sat there staring into the programs, hoping this moment would last forever.
Anyways, where was I? Ah, yes, the prunes. Did Arthur turn to me and said, "Are you all right?" And have I finished me prunes? I laugh and bring myself out of this other world I was in, and I says I am. And I look at the child fast asleep in the monitor and listen to the bear's belly playing, "Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream." And the club is still rabbit gnawing. He's moved on to Bitcoin at this stage. The daughter is in her stillness, and I think of her and the day she was born and the day the child was born, and feeling like a boy again. But the sound of the programmes, the club, rabbit gnawing, and merrily, 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 life is but a dream, all blended in unison with the image of the stillness of me daughter. And I looked in through the side of her eye, and I thought of how I loved her, and how simple life really is. And as I stared through me daughter's eye at the lamplight in the corner, it slowly became blurry. The edge of me daughter's face, her eye, the lamplight, all slowly dissolved into one. And I wrapped my eyelids around these small tears that were gathering. And slowly, quietly, and very deliberately, my eyes fell shut. And I slowly, slowly, slowly drifted off to another world.
That was Clarity at Last by Charlie McGuinness. Seamus O'Rourke played the man and Aveen McCann was the daughter. The club was played by Eamon Owens. Original music was composed and performed by Alana Thornburg, and the sound engineer was Damien Chanel. Clarity at Last by Charlie McGuinness was directed by Ethna Hand.
rte.ie/drama on one.